Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of The Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. As always, I am your host and leader, Brian J. Rowan, and with me, the sole survivor of the zombie apocalypse, Danny King, writer for The Film Stage.
Hey, yeah, tragedy that Nick didn't make it.
Yeah, Nick did not make it, he will be with us next week, possibly as a zombie, depending on if his corpse reanimates.
Hopefully not.
So yeah, it's going to be just Danny and I today. We're going to forego our usual opening crescendo. That's not the right word. No, crescendo works. Crescendo is the rising. Decrescendo is the falling. Anyway, I used to play cello. We're going to forego our opening comments. We were initially going to talk about James Gandolfini or zombie movies, but we have decided to go beyond that. But needless to say, the loss of James Gandolfini is something that has been on all of our minds, and he's going to be an actor who I know I will sorely miss. So just thought we'd put that out there for now. Before we get into the review, though, of World War Z, the newest film starring Brad Pitt, directed by Mark Forster, let us say that you can look us up on iTunes and give a little click to subscribe. You can also give another little click to give us a rating, or you could give a click and a couple of clacks to write us a comment to let us know how we're doing. You can also send us emails at podcast@thefilmstage.com. But that's about it. So let's get into it. The adaptation of Max Brooks's really fantastic, if you haven't read it, you probably should, novel World War Z, starring Brad Pitt and a number of wonderful character actors, directed by Mark Forster and written by half of everyone who works in Hollywood.
Does it live in a jungle?
No.
Oh.
Is it really fast?
No.
Does it live on the Great Plains of Africa?
No.
Hey!
What is going on?
Hold on, guys.
Daddy, be careful on the road. Jerry?
Get back in your car right now!
Remain with your vehicle!
Half, or I thought
it might be a little more than half.
Three-fourths, maybe.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, this movie, I guess we should just say at the top, this is a movie that got a lot of press because of the behind-the-scenes madness that went into its production. The ending was shot and then had to be rewritten and completely reshot. And we'll talk about that in spoilers. We'll see if we think that this ending is better than that. And we'll try our best. Danny, have you read the novel?
I haven't. So.
Okay, so I will try my best to keep my feelings about the novel separate from the film. I will, however, again, say at the top that the novel is in every way superior to the film, but it's almost so different that it doesn't even make sense to talk about it. So
yeah, all right. Just, I mean, feel free to mention it if you want to, though, because I am a little curious at least.
Well, the plot of this film, and it's kind of obvious from the trailers, it's the world being engulfed in a zombie apocalypse, and the way that one man struggles to find a cure or just discover the origin of the virus to save humanity. The book itself is subtitled An Oral History of the Zombie War, and what it is a United Nations report that is told in first person from the perspective of various people who were involved in the massive global campaign to contain or fight the zombie plague. And so it takes this very holistic, intricate web and weaves this idea of what it would actually be like if there were a zombie outbreak. And there's a lot of science in it. There's a lot of geopolitical wrangling. There's a lot of conversation just regarding the harsh reality of what this would involve. And it's a very compelling read, but it also lacks any clear protagonist. It doesn't really have a story. It's like a history book. Like if you were to take people from all over the world during World War II and get their stories down. Like that's not the story of a soldier surviving World War II. It's the story of humanity enduring World War II, which is what this was basically going for. And it was fantastic, and it was compelling, and it was interesting, and it made you really think about the way that humanity as an organism, as a community, would react to something like this. This movie has none of that. In addition, World War Z, the film, basically takes the 28 days later route by making the zombies incredibly fast and making the transformation happen in seconds instead of what the book did, which was take the more classical approach, which was having the zombies be slow, lumbering, brain and flesh hungry creatures, and having the transformation take sometimes days. So, I mean, that's kind of what it is. Like, we, in this film, we have like a singular protagonist fighting the fast zombies. And in that book, it was a great sweeping. Like, if they wanted to make a faux documentary about it, that would be great. But I think in terms of an actual narrative, it was always going to be difficult to do. But they got away from it so much that I can't even do like an Anna Karenina or a Hobbit type review where I can bring the book into it because there's nothing there. Yeah. So now that I've said that, I'm going to leave the book in the past and we'll take the movie purely on its own terms to see how much of a success it was. So Danny, why don't you start us off now that I've spoken almost nonstop for something like 5 minutes?
Oh yeah, certainly. I'll be glad to speak up here. So World War Z, I wasn't really looking forward to this movie for a while, and not in kind of like an actively, like I didn't want to see it way. I just almost like had no feelings toward it whatsoever. Maybe because of the production or whatnot, but I was just not feeling particularly interested in it. And then the other day, a couple days before I saw the movie, David Denby in The New Yorker wrote an article saying how much he liked the movie. And if you know anything about Denby and some of the things he's written recently, that was pretty shocking, especially for like a big budget Hollywood film.
Yeah.
If you remember like his Les Mis review among several other things last year, he was just,
I loved him.
Yeah. Like you gotta respect him for going for broke, I guess. And so I was kind of compelled by the fact that he really liked the movie. And then the more I thought about it, I do, tend to like Brad Pitt a lot. And as a producer, he works on a lot of good movies. So I was like, all right, maybe there's something here. And the movie turned out to be pretty good, in my estimation. It kind of amounts to really just kind of a test of Mark Forster's ability to make a zombie attack interesting in like 5 or 6 different ways and spread it across 2 hours. Because the movie doesn't really waste much time getting into the action. There's a really bad, there's a really bad After Earth-style opening with like the environmental decay, and it's like
it's so bad. Like, movies nowadays seem to just be like taking for granted that everyone feels bad about the way we're treating the earth, and they use that as kind of like the shorthand for like, we're not going to tell you where this came from, but you know, we did something.
Yeah, it's just
like that's bullshit.
It's such a waste of just footage. And like,
and what it makes me think of is do you remember the trailer for The Road?
No.
Okay, so The Road is a movie, and everything in it is kept purposefully oblique. Like, I think the catastrophe is just described as, like, a single shear of light and then a low concussive burst. And so it could either be, like, a meteor impact or, like, nuclear war. But the trailer opens with, like, news footage of, like, Hurricane Katrina and, like, you know, all this terrible stuff happening. Basically, it opens like this movie opens. And people were upset because, like, it really kind of undersold the actual thought behind the book and the movie.
Because all that footage sounds pretty bad.
Yeah, all that footage is nowhere to be seen in the movie. Like, the movie opens in media res. Everything's already gone to shit. But this makes it seem like, yeah, we're going to have a huge action scene where, like, the sky opens up and the water comes over. And so I really just don't get why this film felt the need to open that way.
Yeah. And especially because the source of the zombies doesn't really have much to do with, like, the environment, does it?
No,
it's just kind of...
I guess this could kind of be considered a spoiler. They never really get into what it is or where it came from.
Yeah, they don't really tell you.
Which is fine. It's zombies. Like, it's a plague, yes, but it's also zombies. Like, you know, you don't need that much. Even if you just had, like, a disease sprouted from here, like, that would be fine. You don't need to say, like, oh, maybe it's because of global warming or pollution. That makes less sense than just spontaneous generation.
Yeah. So, yeah, the first couple minutes there is rough going. But then I think the movie gets pretty good. I think actually that's the timing of when I saw it works. I mentioned this in a tweet, but it's kind of a nice film to watch after Man of Steel, because the zombies in the film, and I don't know if this was in the book or if this is like a zombie thing in general, don't like, or they're attracted to noise. So there are scenes in the movie that just have to be quiet, like, because of that reason. And Man of Steel was a stunningly loud film.
That is a stunningly loud film.
Yeah. And that's fine. You know, you can take a loud film like that once a week or something, but it was nice to have some sequences where there wasn't like a score. And this is especially true in like the final set piece, which is just set inside and it's very quiet. So I like that aspect. And in terms of just as sort of a, kind of counter to a lot of superhero movies, it's refreshing to have a hero that's just kind of normal and down to earth. But I would even argue that the character, something more could have been done with him, because he is a little bit lame.
Yeah, he's pretty basic.
Yeah, I mean, I like Brad Pitt, so I could watch the character and be fine with it, but yeah. At a certain point, you have to maybe give him a little more of a personality or something.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I kind of felt the same way. Like, I really was not looking forward to seeing this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed, I don't know, like, loud and just... Like, all the marketing went around, like, the crazy tidal waves of zombies, which are cool. Like, they're interesting. It's an interesting idea to see these creatures behaving in this way that is... Okay, the only thing that the beginning of the film sets up in a vaguely... good way is the way that certain animals will act and the way that the zombies are. You know, like, they show like turning flocks of birds and ants like using each other to make bridges over water. So I guess that's fine. Like, that's great. I guess it sets up a visual cue for like when some insane shit starts happening. But yeah, I mean, Brad Pitt is an actor that I enjoy watching, which is good, because if this had been played by literally anyone else, I probably would have been bored by him.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of felt like he's such a good guy and he's so capable that it felt like this is what an action hero would have felt like, or what I would have conceived as an action hero, like, as a child, like, based on my father. Like, if you have a good relationship with your father, Brad Pitt in this movie is him. He's like kind and patient and he knows everything, and you know, he can fix any injury and he'll be fine, and the world is on his shoulders and he can handle it. There's never a moment of reticence or doubt in him. But he's also not a solipsist. He's not just giving in and doing whatever people are telling him. It's just, I don't know. He's the most eminently boring on paper protagonist ever, but Brad Pitt gives him something.
Yeah, I read
essential Brad Pittedness, I guess.
I read a funny line. I can't remember who wrote it at the moment, but it was describing the character, and it said he's basically a combination of every single character Robert Redford played in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is especially like in that sense, like, he's just a really normal guy, but
he's got the hair for it.
Yeah, the hair too. In terms of kind of one aspect of the movie I liked was how it implied how different countries were reacting to the dilemma. There's kind of this spooky scene where he's talking to David Morse as like this prisoner, and he mentions that I think it was North Korea had like ripped people's teeth out.
Yeah, that was, I mean, yeah, things like that are interesting.
Yeah, and
I will say, like, I don't know that I liked the movie. I know that I did not disenjoy sitting in the theater and watching it.
Yeah.
Will I ever see it again? Probably not. Will I tell anyone not to see it? Probably not. Like, there are some aspects of it that are very good. And that is one of them. It's David Morris. I mean, when has he ever done anything bad?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, things like that where you get an image of how these places would react. I mean, that's a creepy and yet effective way of dealing with things, ripping the teeth out of people.
Very creepy.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a lot that you could pick on for this movie. And I think I'll get into most of it in spoilers. But I mean, some of the things it does right are very quickly and efficiently establishing the rules of the game. Like, I mean, that's basically what it is. I'm playing a video game called The Last of Us, and it's fantastic, and it also deals with infected humans that are basically kind of like zombies, though as time goes on, they become less like zombies and more like other things. But, you know, one of the rules of a video game is, like, you have to know what's going on in terms of gameplay. And so Brad Pitt's character in that first attack in Philadelphia very quickly assembles the rules of the game. Like, his children are attacked, and he's watching. And when he watches, everything kind of goes into, like, Brad Pitt-a-vision. And so he sees this guy get dragged out of the car and then bitten. And then the guy's on the ground. And there's this weird, kind of cute thing they do where he's, like, picked up one of his children's toys that counts down or counts up. And as he's watching it, the toy is counting. So you get an actual, like, oral representation of how long it takes for the people to turn, which is something like 10 to 12 seconds. And then later on, when he's fighting the creatures, he gets some blood in his mouth, and he's worried that he's been infected. And he, like, one of my favorite parts of the movie was, like, he jumps out onto the roof with his family because they're awaiting an extraction, and he just hangs out, like, he stands on the very edge of the building and is counting because he's worried that he's going to turn and he's going to throw himself off if he does.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, that's an affecting scene both emotionally and, again, you're like, okay, so it's only the bite that infects you. Like, it's not a 28 Days Later scenario where it's the blood or anything. So stuff like that works for me. Some other stuff, not so much. What did you think about? I mean, we've talked obliquely about Mark Forrester on this program in the past. Unfortunately, Nick isn't here because I think Nick is his least welcoming critic. But what did you think? How do you think he did on this? Because part of that was that his last film, well, I don't know if it was his last film, but one of his films was Quantum of Solace, which is by far one of the weaker Bond films to come out recently.
Yeah, his last film was actually Machine Gun Preacher.
Oh, sweet.
Which I think like three people saw, or maybe four. So yeah, Quantum of Solace was not very good. I do like Stranger Than Fiction. I don't know if you've seen that one.
I have, and I enjoy it as well.
Yeah, so I mean, I think if you just look at his resume, it's interesting, just some of the different things he's done. To make something like Stranger Than Fiction and then make Quantum of Solace 2 years later. And I think I would say he does a good job on World War Z, especially because so much of the movie is reliant on his ability to just put together a good set piece. And I think more often than not, he does succeed. And that's kind of like what the movie comes down to, is like, can it put together a good sequence of zombies trying to eat people? Like the one you mentioned on the roof, the kind of the tension before that, it's like all the lights are off, I think, and they just have this red like flame. And so the whole kind of scene is, that's like the only light. So that was pretty good. I'm trying to think what, obviously the final one I liked. We can save some of the specifics for spoilers, but it's set within like a hospital medical facility, and it's very quiet, which is kind of paradoxical for a film that's called World War Z. I've actually seen some complaints that it's kind of lame for the movie to end on something like that, because it sort of removes itself from all the implications of, you know, the title and the scope and whatnot.
Exactly.
Which is maybe a problem you had with it.
We'll get into it in spoilers, but it is an issue that I had. My feelings about that scene aside, because I really liked that scene, but again, it just kind of betrays the idea that's put out by the title of the film.
It is. It's right there in the title. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
I would say overall, though, he does a good job. I mean, any problems like that are sort of more in the writing, I would say, and the trouble of adapting that.
The writing in this is kind of weird, because scene to scene, it's very good. But when you start to look at the way the scenes are connected, it doesn't make, like, it's insanity. It's just this weird, like, collection of interesting action set pieces connected by plane rides. And it almost makes no sense whatsoever, the way that, like, he just jumps from place to place. But, I mean, I don't know. On a storytelling level, I don't think it's that great. But for the sheer spectacle and the set pieces when they do come, I think it's worth it. So that's my ringing endorsement.
Yeah, there's a lot of planes here.
Yeah, quite a few planes. But I think that actually does cover our non-spoiler feelings. Were there any other aspects that you wanted to highlight or, you know, ward away from before we got into the specifics of the plot?
James Badge Dale.
It's
good
James,
to see him.
James Badge Dale elevates everything he's in immediately. I love that guy.
That was a good sequence too, because it was all kind of like in the rain.
Yeah.
And, but
it
he
was a very moody sequence.
Yeah. He owns the movie for about 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah, he does. Oh, here's an interesting fact. Matthew Fox is in this movie. Does not have a speaking role.
And what's weird about it too is, because I think his character is actually mentioned in that piece over at movies.com about the original ending or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can tell that he probably shot scenes that aren't in the movie, because the scenes he's in this cut, it's not even like he's not even recognizable in terms of like the camera being close to him and saying like, this is Matthew Fox. Like there's one scene where I think he's delivering news to someone and the camera's a good distance away from him and his face is like blocked by the person he's talking to.
It's absolutely ridiculous. Cause I was watching it. I'm just like, is that Matthew Fox? Holy shit, like, it's Matthew Fox.
Yeah. Because like, if you know that if like Forster is directing that scene and that's like one of Matthew Fox's only like 3 scenes, he's probably going to like show the actor.
Yeah.
But all of his scenes in this movie, he's awkwardly in the background, and so it's kind of entertaining.
They're like purposefully not underlining the fact that it's him. They're hoping that we won't notice. But I goddamn noticed. I watched 6 seasons of Lost. I know that is him. But so that's our feelings on World War Z. Go out and see it, I guess.
MoviePass.
I don't know. It'll be on at some point. I do think that one or two of the set pieces live up to the big screen. Everything else is not so much. But let's move into spoilers. So spoilers ahead for World War Z. We'll be discussing the end and some of the other problems I had with this movie. I mean, there's some twists and turns that this movie takes that I'd like to talk about now. And I hope that people are listening still and they haven't turned us off thinking that they've heard it all. Because one of my biggest problems with this film is the idea of the virus beyond what we talked about in the non-spoiler section. Like, I don't mind. I like Brad Pitt doing his little cliffhanger thing. I like the fact that they set up the rules and then kind of stick with them in terms of the action of the plot. But then every once in a while, they just throw in this thing. Like, when they're first talking about it, they're like, you know, 5% of the population can carry it without being turned for like 5 minutes or like a day. And I'm just like, okay. And then they're like, major population centers were quick to spread because the airplanes moved it. And I'm like, well, how is that? Like, I guess the first 5% were infected first and then started like biting people, because it's not spread any other way but the bite. So like, if you really drill down and think about it, there's absolutely no way that this could have gotten around the world the way that it's showing.
Yeah, everything you just said confused me. So I have no idea what, what the movie is.
Yeah, because it's ridiculous. It's a little crazy. And I think that they're trying to say that as the virus grew and infected more people, it would take hold faster. Like, maybe it was growing in strength from person to person. Because even the soldiers are like, well, this guy took, like, a day, and this guy took, like, 12 minutes or 12 hours. And it's just like, well, why don't you just pick a time frame and stick with it? Because that's just aggravating.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, like, and unfortunately, if you think about it that way, the whole movie falls apart. But let's not think about it that way. Let's move on. That's poor scripting, I believe. The other thing is that Brad Pitt's character is on a plane at first with this virologist who is going out to find the source of the plague so that it can be stopped.
Oh, yeah, that seems hilarious.
The virologist is shown to be a kind of timid man on the NATO ship, not NATO, UN ship. And then the second he's in that C-130, he has a monologue that would not be out of place in the NBC show Hannibal or Dexter because of his creepy intensity and his fascination with the way Mother Nature mercilessly butchers people.
Yeah, that scene was hilarious.
Yeah.
I know, like, when he started that speech, and after about two or three lines, I was like, okay, if this ends now, this will be fine. Like, this will be an okay moment. Like, we get what he's trying to say. But you had this feeling that he was just going to keep going for, like, another minute. And obviously that's what happened. And it was just this really bizarre moment. And then he dies.
Yeah.
Like, a second later.
I was like, man, this guy, like, what if he's, like, responsible for it? Like, what if he did it? And then he just, like, turns, slips, falls, shoots himself in the face.
Yeah, that was just a really weird couple of scenes.
That was so bizarre.
Because, like, they set him up as such a crucial figure. Like, he is our genius.
He was, like, humanity's last great hope. And Brad Pitt was going to be, like, just the guy that has to get him a place.
Yeah, like an escort.
And then, so I was like, that's kind of cool. Because, you know, you've got maybe, like, a little buddy cop thing. Maybe Brad Pitt isn't as important. But, like, and then all of a sudden just slip, bang. And it took me a good minute to decide that he was actually dead.
Yeah, I was, like, thrown off. I was like, wait, what? Like, and then I think there's that scene where Brad Pitt shows up at the army base, and they're like, all right, where's the scientist?
Got him in the face.
Yeah, Brad Pitt's like, oh, he's dead. Yeah. And you're just like, well, like, what? Great.
So then he's like, well, I guess I'll do it, because I listened to that creepy minute-long monologue.
I can channel his spirit.
That's all you really need to know, right? Right, you can make an informed opinion off of that. And he does. Brad Pitt absolutely creates an informed opinion, and it turns out to be right. This is only after he goes to Israel, which, looking back on it, again, is kind of a pointless trip.
Is that when he talks to the guy?
Yeah, because here's the thing. This movie sets itself up in a way, and unfortunately, by talking about it so much, I'm starting to realize how stupid it is. I can't just enjoy it anymore, because now I'm delineating all the problems. He's trying to find where the virus came from. And so he goes to the first place where they, like, kind of found it, and it was, like, bringing up the idea of zombies. Like, they actually call them zombies in this movie, which is nice. But so he goes to the base, and they're like, the crazy CIA guy is like, you know, well, the Israelis knew what was going on, ask them. And so he goes to Israel, and the guy in Israel is like, well, you know, we got an intercept from a memo in India where they were talking about fighting, like, whatever the Indian word for zombie is. And so my next thought is, okay, now he's going to go to India. But instead, on the plane, he's just like, oh, hey, let's go to Cardiff to go to the WHO building, because I think I know how to fight the zombie disease, or at least vaccinize against it. And so, like, the entire point of the movie has just been shifted.
Yeah, there's a lot of rash decision making in terms of his flight plan.
Oh my god. I did love Sagan, the Israeli, I guess, defense force woman. Was she with Mossad?
Oh,
I don't know who she was.
Is that, like, the woman that ends up being his companion?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was good. And
she was awesome.
They have that cool scene on the plane where he, like, gives her a liquor bottle, and it reminded me of Flight. I was just like, all right, has Mark Forrester seen Flight? Does he know what he's doing here?
If Captain Whitaker had been on that plane, everyone
there would still be no crisis. Yeah, there would. Nothing would have happened.
Whitaker the hell out of that situation. But yeah, so they go to the WHO, and Brad Pitt has all these like flashbacks to when he saw people get passed over by the zombies. And so it turns out that if you are not healthy, I guess defined in this movie as having contracted a disease that could kill you, then you the zombies won't go for you because their virus only wants healthy hosts. Which is clever. I'm going to give it that. Like, that's an idea that makes sense in the context of the way that actual things work. And then they have this really effective scene where they're like the zombies when no one is around go into a dormant phase where they basically become normal zombies. And they don't swarm like locusts. And so they go and they get it, and then he tries it out, and then he wins. And then there's like a montage at the end talking about how, you know, everyone's getting infected with like bacterial meningitis. Like, it's something that can be cured. Like, we're not just going to give the whole world Ebola just to stop the zombies. But the thing that you brought up about the ending is that this is a movie called World War Z. And what it turns into is one man playing haunted house with some zombies. Like, the focus narrows so dramatically in that last scene, and it's so good that it kind of just makes me wish that this had just been, like, a normal zombie movie. Like, kind of the draw of World War Z is seeing the world fighting the zombies. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and especially, I mean, like, some of the weird logic of the narrative prior to that point that you've kind of talked about. Even though those are some weird transitions, you feel like the movie is going out of its way to justify its scope. So that's part of the reason for that. And then the ending is completely different. So it's another, I mean, just the shift kind of throws you off a bit from all of these kind of scenes across the world and all these flights. And then all of a sudden he's like in a room with a zombie, just like one-on-one to save the world. Yeah, I mean, that scene is just pretty, like, just well done. I mean, like, the moment when he has to just pick a random vaccine and inject himself is pretty cool. And then...
Yeah, that was another one of those things where it's just, like, there are people on the screen, they're just like, okay, well, he can shoot himself up with anything from the right cabinet, but if he takes the left, he's gonna...
Yeah, yeah. And what's also kind of funny about that research facility, like, those scenes when he first shows up and then when he wakes up, like how skeptical those people are of him.
Yeah.
It was like weird because it kind of,
they were like, like they were really skeptical and he was being like just stupidly oblique.
Yeah. It was like, it just felt like wasted minutes. Like, yeah. I was like, all right, just get past this.
Like, Jerry, why don't you just say I'm with the UN? I'm an investigator sent to try to stop this thing. Why would you be like, you know, where's the phone? Give me the phone.
I've been out for 3 days. Damn it. I have to wreck more havoc on the world. But yeah. So clearly, you know, there were some rewrites going on.
A little bit. I mean, the original ending has them just like wrecking it up in Moscow.
Yeah, it's pretty insane, and I would totally watch it just out of curiosity. I guess they had too many scenes in different countries, so they had to, for the climax, they had to kind of rein it in a little bit or something. Yeah.
And then they just I don't know, it's just kind of weird. It's odd. But again, like, it's not enough to like torpedo the movie. It's still enjoyable, but it is just odd. There's no other way to put it. I think it's weird that it like narrows down so much. And maybe that's a little bit of the book seeping back into my consciousness, which I said I wouldn't do, but it's I can't get over it. It's just like, how are you going to take a movie called World War Z and end it with Brad Pitt alone fighting zombies in a medical unit? I just don't know. But it's a good scene. It might be the best scene in the movie. But that's just, it just kind of lets you know how, like, I guess rickety this film was when they initially went in to make it.
Yeah, I guess it's like the fact that I might be a little more positive on it just speaks to like how low the bar was set for me going in, because like it makes no sense for the scope of the movie to change so drastically. But, you know, if I'm like sitting there watching it, if the movie can keep me vaguely interested and make me feel like vaguely suspenseful, I'll be like, all right, great job. Like, totally
all right, I'm
succeeded.
Feeling something.
This is an amazing accomplishment. That's all you have to do, really.
Oh, man. All right, well, I think I'm done talking about this if you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, not a lot else to say. So, decently okay film. Don't think about it too much.
Yeah. The sequel?
Apparently they are making one, aren't they?
Yeah, I haven't read about it yet. But
so maybe that one will be like actual World War Z. Like World War Z, : here's the war.
Here's the world part.
Oh my god. All right, well, let's move on. Let's talk about what is coming out to theaters and DVD in the coming weeks. So, coming to Blu-ray, we got a bunch of reissues, which all look bananas, so we're going to skip past those. We have Showa. We have Upside Down, The Incredible Burt Wonderstone, The Call, and Phantom, amongst numerous others, including the English remake of Pusher, Gael Garcia Bernal in No, and yeah, I'm committed to stopping there. So, any of these really jumping out at you, Danny?
I read something today that was talking about the special features on the Showa Blu-ray, and it seemed pretty like a pretty impressive package. So I'd imagine that would be worth the dime. No is pretty good too. I saw that.
Yeah, I've not seen No, but it looked pretty good. Have you seen Upside Down?
No. I was kind of curious, though.
Yeah, I was curious about that. I wanted to see it. So maybe just on like pure curiosity scale, I'll see that, because nothing else really is doing it for me.
It's weird that it's out on Blu-ray already. I feel like...
Is it? I thought it came out a couple months ago.
Maybe it did. Maybe I'm just...
Who knows?
Maybe
Incredible...
no one saw it.
The Incredible Burt Wonderstone was awful.
Okay.
Stunningly mediocre, I think, is what I called it.
No interest.
I've heard weird things about The Call and the way it ends, but I don't know how it ends, so don't quote me on that. And then there's Phantom, which has David Duchovny and Ed Harris, and no one has seen it.
No one.
All right, well, that's over. So let's go to theaters, opening June 28th. We have The Heat, which is Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy. White House Down, which is Channing Tatum and Jamie Foxx. I'm So Excited, which is Pedro Almodovar. And Byzantium, which is directed by Neil Jordan, starring... I do not know how to say her name.
Yeah.
Is it Saoirse? Saoirse Ronan?
Maybe. Saoirse.
Saoirse. Starring Miss Ronan from Hannah and Atonement fame. And Gemma Arterton. So, also Redemption, starring Jason Statham. So, yeah. Any of these, Danny?
I don't know. I guess we might be reviewing White House Down.
We might be.
Yeah. I mean, Channing Tatum hasn't struck out in a while, so got some faith there, I guess.
I've got faith in Channing.
Yeah.
And Olympus Has Fallen was stunningly not that bad.
Yeah, I thought it was dumb fun.
Yeah, so maybe this will be dumber fun.
Yeah.
Because it looks like this one is going for a little more comedy.
Yeah, it also looks a little bit more polished.
Yeah. I just think, like, Jamie Foxx playing the president in the trailers has been like, he could be unsufferable.
Well, it seems like a weird role. Like, he has a lot of the jokes.
Yeah, like... I don't know if I'm okay with the president being that jokey.
Yeah, we'll see. Because who was it? It was Aaron Eckhart.
Yeah.
Olympus Has Fallen. Yeah, he
had that, like, stolid, like, stone-jawed, like, almost Harrison Ford-level stoicism as the president.
Yeah. And that like opening scene where he's boxing with Gerard Butler.
Yeah.
That was hilarious. Like they're bonding. And
oh,
then he,
God.
Yeah.
And then he's, I don't know. That was like, do fucking Secret Service agents really like get to be that friendly with the president? I don't feel like they would, but who knows? It's a movie. And anyway, Channing Tatum's awesome. Everything else, I don't know about. I'm vaguely interested in Byzantium.
Yeah. Vampires.
It looks interesting. It looks interesting.
I would, I'd normally be excited for a new Almodovar, but I have heard very mixed things.
So you're not so excited.
I'm not so excited, but I'll see it. See what he's up to there. It's mostly set in a plane, I think, so it might be relevant.
The goddamn trailer for it is hilarious, but I just don't know if that's going to translate.
Yeah, it's actually, I've seen that trailer a few times in like art house theaters with like snobbier audiences, and it's funny because for the first minute, I don't know, like people might not know what it is, and then there's a title card that says like a film by Almodovar, and then everyone laughs and they're all like, ha ha ha, the great auteur, his latest work, he's so clever.
Yeah, they like seem to perk up just because it's him. They're like, oh fuck, I'm supposed to like this.
Damn it, I'll have to see it.
I'm not interested at all in The Heat, and I've never heard of Redemption. So, that's that. We'll give you now our personal selections of films that we've watched on our own that we think you should check out, and then we'll get out of your way. So, Danny, why don't you kick us off?
Well, a film I watched a couple weeks ago, but I've been doing some reading on it, is Barton Fink, Coen Brothers.
I don't know. Okay, so have you ever seen the Simpsons episode that has Barton Fink in it?
No, but it sounds amazing.
It's just like, it's this really random, weird joke where it's just like a bunch of kids and they're like piled into a pickup truck. And they're like, hey, Bart, we're going to go see this new movie. It's called Barton Fink. And then Bart's like, I can't go. I got to wait for my dad. And then they just drive off chanting, Barton Fink, Barton Fink.
Well, that sounds very good.
Yeah, it's crazy. There's like a bunch of Simpsons fans out there going nuts. Like, I know that one.
It's a classic.
It is a classic. But anyway, so we're,
yeah, no, I thought it was a very good movie. Have you seen it?
I have not actually.
Okay. It's on Netflix Instant, and it's about a playwright that has a successful hit, and he gets recruited by Hollywood to write a script. And there's murder and noir atmosphere, stuff like that. But it's kind of interesting for how subjective it is, because he ends up holed up in this hotel room, and Steve Buscemi plays the bellhop, and he's really funny, and he mentions kind of like how busy the hotel is, but you really only ever see one or two other people, and in his hotel room, the walls kind of start peeling, and there's all these weird sounds that he hears in other rooms. So I think you could interpret a lot of the movie as just being filtered through his head. And it's sort of an interesting way to use these noir touches to tell like a very, tell a very subjective story. And the ending is totally kind of ambiguous. By the end, it's almost like he's just lost complete sight of reality. So yeah, it's like that. It's a movie like that. And actually, when it premiered at Cannes, it won the Palme d'Or, it won Best Actor for John Turturro, and it won Best Director, which is insane. And I think that is probably what forced the festival to kind of change that rule. Like, I don't think a film can do that anymore, sweep the three top awards. That's absurd. So yeah, I'd recommend Barton Fink.
All right, excellent. My turn.
Dun, dun, dun.
Down. I've watched a lot. Not much of it was very good.
I hate when that happens.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. But I can't remember what I was going to say now. Which one did I choose that was actually decent?
They were all so mediocre.
Yeah, I watched just like a bunch of random stuff and I just like didn't get into any of it. It's been a weird week for movies. I believe that the one that I enjoyed the most was a rewatch that I did of Thank You for Smoking. Speaking of Aaron Eckhart.
Yeah.
A fantastic, funny movie, and unfortunately I don't feel like any of Reitman's other films have matched it. I have not thoroughly enjoyed a movie of his since Thank You for Smoking. So I don't know what that says about him or me, but... wasn't a fan of Juno. Up in the Air was kind of okay, but it was just more George Clooney-ing.
Yeah.
And Young Adult was fine.
I feel like Young Adult's maybe the closest.
Yeah, it was definitely a step...
in terms of tone.
Yeah, it was a step back in the right direction, but I don't know. There's something about Eckhart. There's something about the subject matter. There's something about like the energy put into it.
Maybe you just don't like Diablo Cody.
I don't like Diablo Cody, I think.
Yeah, because he wrote Up in the Air, but Up in the Air is definitely not like a satire.
No, it is not. So yeah, I don't know. Do I have to really talk about what Thank You for Smoking is about? I think everyone's probably seen it.
Cigarettes.
I do love the song that starts off that movie. That's just about smoking cigarettes.
Appropriate.
Yeah, that's neither here nor there, though. So, yeah, I'm just going to let that lay as it may. Thank You for Smoking. A fantastically funny film. And, yeah, that's it. So, end of the show. Danny, why don't you tell the people at home where you can be found?
Yes. Thefilmstage.com, thekingbulletin.com, and twitter.com/thekingbulletin.
And I can be found on Twitter at twitter.com/BrianJRowan, on my personal blog at dearfilm.net, and at thefilmstage at thefilmstage.com. So thank you everybody for joining us, and tune in next week when again, hopefully Nick will be back, and we will probably maybe be talking about White House Down. In the coming weeks. So, coming to Blu-ray. Oh, shit. I don't have my Blu-ray thing up.